sponsored by JMR Rentals, professional digital cinema and broadcast equipment rentals in Brooklyn, New York. JMRNY.com.
Hello and welcome to No Rest for the Weekend. I'm Jason Godby. Today on the program, we've got an update for you on a film that we first reported on last year at the Tribeca Film Festival. We have an interview with the film's director coming up, but first, here's a look at the new crime thriller, Blood for Dust.
What are you selling?
I'll sell products that sell themselves.
You're an arms dealer who sells drugs, Ricky.
I don't need a salesman. I'm sorry.
We need money.
I'll try. All I need is something that pays.
Well, I didn't think you'd call me.
Risks?
Getting caught.
How much?
It's him. The only thing that matters is that you are a man that no one would expect.
Did you expect me tonight?
Well, he's the perfect cover.
Drop it off. Slim knows where you need to be.
Make sure the salesman doesn't get up to anything. Now I'm gonna say this once. We are in a deal. Okay. Everything you are connected to will die.
So this is part of some plan?
How's that for a school, man?
How do I know you're not gonna do that to me?
If I wanted you gone, you'd be gone.
We don't like anybody who takes what's ours.
Every scheme needs a scapegoat.
Think what you're doing doesn't have an expiration date? Get out big.
And joining me now, he is the director of Blood for Dust, Mr. Rod Blackhurst. Welcome, Rod.
Hey, that's me. Happy to be here.
So where are you coming to us from?
I live in Nashville, Tennessee, the cinematic hotspot of the United States.
I'm glad to see you again. We first met at Tribeca last year when you guys were premiering Blood for Dust. We got to talk to you and a couple of other people, a couple of the actors, and your producer was there. And we actually just reported on this because the movie's finally about to come out. So I'm eager to talk about it. I did get a chance to see it. I liked it very much. But first, so for those who haven't seen it, can you give us a little bit about the movie and kind of tell us how it came to be?
Yeah, Blood for Dust is a dramatic crime thriller set in 1993 about a traveling salesman named Cliff, played by Scoot McNairy, who's drowning under the myth of the American dream. He's trying to figure out how to make ends meet. And he ends up with an opportunity to do some questionable things with a former colleague named Ricky, who's played by Kit Harington. And Scoot's character, Cliff, very quickly realizes that this is not going to end well. And so he needs to start calculating like how to navigate everything that's about to happen and does happen. It's a story that my friend David and I wrote right after the success of our first film, Here Alone, in 2016. And it takes forever for some reason to get anything made. And this story is, and this film is, no less different than everything else we're trying to get into the world. But yeah, it's just, another original idea, a film that I think came from also a deep love of our creative collaborative unit. Like, not just my producer and business partner, Noah Lang. We run a small studio called Witchcraft together. But I mean, really, this film comes from like calling the tribe up again and saying, hey, we're going, it's like Shackleton calling, you know, trying to put together a team of men and being like, we're headed out into the great unknown. It kind of surprises me that that's the film of all the films we have on our slate that we were able to get made. I mean, again, it's a film from a different era of filmmaking. It's a, you know, a contemplative, quiet, dramatic thriller. But I mean, grateful that it exists, of course, and grateful that we got a chance to make it at all. I mean, it's hard to get any movie made, let alone one that is an independent film that never has enough money, you know. But again, I couldn't be happier that like we did get the chance to make it and that it is the thing that we got to make next.
When I was watching this movie, first of all, you say it's in a lot of it, I believe you shot in Montana for a lot of it, and it looks super cold. Like there's so much snow around. One thing I was curious about was why 1993? And or like why the, you know, like why a like sort of a pre-smartphone era, and then why Montana of all places?
Truth is the film was originally set in Texas in 1993. It was set during the hottest summer on record. And some of that was because and the era was deliberate. It was right before the internet came to be, and it was right before people's, I don't know, the things they knew about the world and the way that things worked were about to change. You know, as the internet came to be, you know, present in most people's lives, they could start to learn things that were outside of their sphere, and they could start to learn greater truths. And America for a long time was, your people's experience were myopic. It was only like, they could only know the things they knew based on what they were being told about the way that the world worked. And so that was important for us. Also, you know, we were looking at a bygone era, like, you know, we use the traveling salesman to stand in for an existence, right? Like, which is the idea of like people that are rowing upstream or going against the grain or kind of anomalies. They're unique individuals out there in the world marching to the beat of their own drum, and largely like they're going against currents of life and forces that are against them. And that to me is an interesting like character, because it feels like actually the filmmaker's existence, even the filmmaker's existence in 2024. So those were all the reasons to set it in 1993, but originally we were going to film it in Montana, set for Texas. But once it became clear that we had to film in the winter, a cold Montana winter could not stand in for a hot Texas summer. So we immediately did a bunch of research, and we found out that in the 90s, Montana was like the place where all the drug routes that were coming up to the United States were then flowing through as they went into Canada. And we also realized that at that time, Montana was still the Wild West. I mean, it's still probably people in Montana would say, hey, we're still the Wild West right now. Like, but it was still very much a place where men went to win favor and get ahead. There were a lot of mineral rights, land rights, water rights, things that were being exploited there. And there weren't a lot of people. No one was looking around. There were like, you could go there to maybe get away with some things or to hide out. I mean, that's again, the neo-Western qualities of the film. So it actually, once it became clear that we needed to film Montana for Montana, it really changed the dynamic of the movie. I mean, the cold became its own incredible character. The snow becomes this character in the film. And it also, I think, like it helped us become something different. There are a lot of movies set in Texas. There are a lot of crime thrillers set in Texas. And I feel like there aren't a lot of movies that get set in Montana. I mean, I think like Taylor Sheridan made a movie called Wind River that might be set in, I don't know if it's set in Montana or Idaho. I can't remember, but like, I can't think of too many other movies that where Montana is a character in the story like it is in our movie. And so it really, you know, it at first it was a stress point. How do we adapt this story to be told here? And then it became something that once we embraced it, it really allowed the film to come alive in a very unique and dynamic way.
I tell you, man, I was cold just watching this movie. You know, like I live in New York, which is not the warmest place, but I think Montana cold and like Midwest big sky cold is way different than like New York cold. And I just thought about, you know, some camera op standing in, you know, 6 inches of snow trying to get the shot, and you guys driving around on these highways. I mean, it does really give a sense of space and time, because no offense to Montanans, but like, I think if you went there now, you'd probably feel like you went back in time. You know, like, I don't know how modern it feels, kind of thing, to be there.
I mean, we got lucky. Like, we filmed in Billings, Montana. Billings stood in for all these places in the movie. And we were able to find many places that felt like they were wrinkles in time, right? Where it still felt like, you know, the 90s were alive. And that's not a pejorative. Like, that's actually, like, it's kind of wonderful to see the way the United States works like that, right? Like, that things remain untouched, or, you know, or maybe time moves a little differently there. It was cold. We filmed a lot of nights overnight, where, you know, it was 0 to -20, -25 degrees with wind chill. It was tough. But again, you can feel it in the movie, right? The cold is palpable. You can see people look cold. I mean, but also the grandeur of Montana is also a reflection of what Cliff is going through, right? There's these quiet, wide, vast open spaces, and he's isolated and all alone. Cliff is the main character, played by Scoot McNairy. And granted, we were going to work to do that in Texas and in West Texas. You know, you have these wide open spaces and you have these things happening where they can just disappear into the landscape, right? Or like, almost like, you know, the earth swallows these things up. Like, it just, it deadens these things, or it catches these things and keeps them in the ground, or keeps them hidden. And Montana had that quality as well, right? Like, there's this grandeur and this quietness to it, that really plays a part narratively. And we really tried to lean into that as well in the sound design and in the score of the film. I mean, there's moments where insane things are happening and it's dead silent. There isn't, I mean, you're just hearing the natural sound. There's also times where small things are happening, but you hear the score is calling for you. It's like drums. We talked about it being like drums over the horizon that are announcing, hey, like, we're coming for you. Like, your enemy is just beyond. You can't see them, but they're making a lot of noise. Like, it will show up for you, even if that enemy is your own self or the things you've done or the choices you've made. Like, you know, Montana, again, truly allowed the film to come alive in a unique way. And really, we had this incredible Montana team that made it all possible. So it wouldn't have existed without them. So, I mean, again, at first it was like, how do we change this movie? And then it became this wonderful thing that I can't even see the Texas version of the film anymore. And nobody ever will, you know. It would be the same story, just set in a dry Texas summer where everyone is dying of thirst, not dying of cold exposure, you know.
One thing I wanted to ask you too is about, like, the getting this together and getting this cast together. You have a hell of a cast. And getting everybody there. I mean, was the winter thing a schedule thing, I imagine, because you've got to get these different people together? And how were you kind of able to assemble the ensemble?
Yeah, so we had to move the film from being set in the summer and filming in Billings in September to being in the winter, just because of Scoot McNairy's schedule and Kit Harington's schedule. They had other obligations that they needed to fulfill first. But the truth is, like, Scoot McNairy was the first person to say yes to this film. And I'd been trying to find a way to work with Scoot McNairy since 2011, actually, when I saw him in this incredible film called The Off Hours that also made me hip to this incredible actor. And she's now a director named Amy Simons. And I just have always loved Scoot for his ability to, I don't know, like, effortlessly approximate what my experience looks like, or what my experience might be in a situation. But really, like, you know, from there, like, it became this process of, like, trying to just find people I wanted to work with, selfishly, people that I loved as an actor, people that I wanted to work with, people whose choices I love, people whose presence I love. And I didn't know Kit Harington and I didn't know Josh Lucas, but we just put, you know, we took a chance and put sent some emails and made some calls to agents and managers and said, hey, these are people that would be perfect for this role. They probably don't get considered for things like this. I'd love to work with them. I mean, there are also some other people in the movie that are friends that we just called up and we begged them to play a part. Like Steven Dorff is one of them. He lives here in Nashville. And we met on April 20th, 2022. Like he gave me a call out of the blue. And we became friends. And when he found out I was making a movie with Scoot, they had been together and on True Detective season 3, he was like, I'll come to Montana. He's like, I'll come to Montana. Like, you want me to, what scene do you want me in? And I was like, oh my gosh, I only have one small character left. Like, do you want to do this? He was like, let's do it. So, you know, he came to Montana for a day. I think he filmed for half a day. Or Ethan Suplee, who's in the film, is a friend of mine. We met on the internet a bunch of years ago. Like we like some of the same things and we got to talking and he'd seen some of my movies. And eventually, same thing, when it came time to make this movie, I sent him a text one day and I was like, Ethan, we're going to be in Montana. He said, I hate the cold. He didn't use the word hate, but he's like, I don't want to be cold. And then I was like, but I need you. And he said, okay, I'll come to Montana. And like, I think that like, this is movie making writ large for me, is like calling your friends, calling the people you want to be around, calling the people you want to be in the trenches with and saying, we're going to battle. I need you to have my back, right? Will you show up for me? And to hear these people who you love and respect say, you have my axe. Like that's what I want when it comes to making a movie. And I was able to get that with Blood for Dust. So the ensemble is incredible. I mean, it's all these awesome faces that people love. And here they are in my movie. Like I still can't believe it exists, right? Like I'm a kid that grew up in a small town and wanted to make movies and you dream. And now here we are. And it's awesome. It's an awesome feeling.
You've seen it now in the theater. You saw it at Tribeca. What was the kind of reaction to it and what impact do you want it to have on audiences now?
Yeah. So it's funny, when we met at Tribeca, we screened an unfinished cut of the film and we didn't tell anybody at the time. And the film changed even from what we presented at Tribeca. Like it got shorter, it got better. There were temporary VFX. We cut out maybe 20% of the score. And I only mention that because I don't think anybody would know, right? Like the chances are very slim. But at the time, we had actually vowed to the Tribeca Festival when we won the audience award in 2016. We had vowed to Kara Kusama, who's now the festival director. At the time, she was a programmer. And we'd said, no matter what film we make next, we'll bring it back here, because Tribeca took a chance and saw us as filmmakers and gave us the opportunity to be seen by other people. And it was important for us to honor that word. At the time, we, like the distributor, the Avenue, who's releasing Blood for Dust, and Highland Film Group needed us to hand them Blood for Dust by a certain date. So it really, we looked at that schedule in 2023 and there were really only about 3 film festivals we could seek to premiere the film at. And that's if we had like ignored the pledge that we had made. Nobody knew about the pledge we made, but for us, like we had said that to Kara. I don't even know if she remembered it at the time. So anyway, when it came time, when we were looking at like, what do we do with this movie? How do we get it out into the world? We said, well, we're going to go to Tribeca. And so that's why we screened an unfinished cut of the film, or an unfinished version of the film, because it felt like the way to honor our word and the way to also meet our schedule for delivery of the movie. Now, though, you know, the movie's done and meticulous and perfect as far as like the things we wanted to do, the things I wanted to do with the movie. I truly hope that people watch this movie because they love cinema. They love art. They love craft. They love incredible performance, nuance. They want something deliberate and thoughtful and artful and meaningful. And if people are looking for that, then I think Blood for Dust might be the film for them. And I wish more of those movies existed. So selfishly, I'm just trying to fill the void in my own life. In some ways, although I'm not going to watch my movie repeatedly, but I would like more movies like Blood for Dust to exist. So you kind of go and make one, because we started to hear that a lot of people like these sorts of films and wish there were more of them. So I don't know. I guess I hope that's what people get to have, is like a chance to engage with a piece of cinema that is unlike a lot of the content that's being made right now. Because, man, I don't know how people make content. I don't know why people watch content. Let's watch movies and let's make cinema. You know, that's sort of how I feel about it.
So for those who want to check out the film, where can they find it? Is it going to be on VOD? You guys doing theatrical release?
Yeah, so Blood for Dust comes out April 19th in the United States. It's a day and date release. It'll be in some limited theaters and online. And it will be online forever and ever after that. So man, please take a chance and tell a friend about it if you like it. And if you hate it, tell a friend too. Just don't leave us a bad comment online. Just can, you can leave, you can leave, you can tell us you hate it. I'd rather someone have a visceral reaction to something and then have no reaction at all. Like, I don't want to make milk toast. I'm not that guy. Like, it's okay if you hate it, but if you love it, please tell us as well. I'll take that.
Well, man, I saw it. I liked it very much. I think you got some great performances. It surprised me. You know, I will say I was like, oh, you know, there's a couple of times I jumped back in my seat and I was like, oh, you know, like I've kind of been missing that. I've been kind of missing the quiet thriller, you know, and that's kind of really performance dependent. And I also think that this is something we haven't seen in terms of this part of the country, this time period, these kinds of people, you know, because they're not glamorous. You know, it's not that, it's not a Hollywood kind of movie. So, you know, will there be a market for it? We'll see. You know, hopefully yes. But, you know, for people who want to find you and, you know, maybe your next project, and of course, you're welcome to come back and talk about that one. Where can they find you online?
And I'm on Instagram, I guess. It's probably the best. Just my name, Rod Blackhurst. If anyone cares, like I probably just post a lot of pictures of my kids or albums I like and, you know, but yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm on the internet. I'm in Nashville. I love movies. I want to make lots of movies. I raised this child up. It's out in the world. It graduated high school. It's going to college on its own. It'll become its own thing. Now it's time to raise the other kids that need to become, they need to have other paths in life. And yeah, so making many more things. I mean, Ethan Suplee and I are about to go make another movie very shortly. So yeah, just, you know, getting back into the trenches with the homies and the people you love.
All right. Thanks a bunch, Rod. I really appreciate you taking the time and good luck. Good luck with this film and good luck
with
the next
one. I really appreciate it.
So I did get a chance to see Blood for Dust. I didn't get a chance to see it in the theater, but I did see it at home. I think it's a strong film. I think it's a type of film we haven't seen in a while. It's a quiet thriller. There's not a ton of action. It's not slick. It's not glossy. It's not a very Hollywood film. It's definitely an indie. But what do you get out of it? You get really strong performances. McNary, Harrington, they're both really, really good. Everybody's really, really good in it. Even the smaller parts. Nora Zehetner, we interviewed her on the red carpet. She plays McNary's wife. Unfortunately, she doesn't get a ton to do, but she is ever present in the film. She's the voice on the other end of the phone, and she's the reason why he's doing all this. They have a family. Their son has been ill. So the stakes are definitely there. You can see why he would do something so desperate as to, you know, peddle drugs in the back of his car and work with this sketchy guy and Kit Harington. One of the things I really liked about it, it's a character study. And none of the characters, with save maybe Zehetner's character, are really black and white. They're very gray, sometimes a little bit more on one side or the other. But even Scoot McNary, who's the guy that we're sympathizing with, he's not all on the level. You know, Kit Harington, very, very shady. We can see from the get-go, this guy is not on the up and up. But McNary's character, he's wise of that, but he's sort of forced to make a deal with the devil because he's in this desperate situation. He can't get a job. He's got to do something to earn money for his family. And he makes this bargain to try to make ends meet, which says a lot in terms of, you know, the plight of people in this country. This is set in the 90s, but it could be set now. I think the 90s element, it does help in terms of the setting, and it gives you a world to be in. Also, I think it's just easier to do these types of movies in a world before internet and smartphones and things like that. There's a couple of instances, actually quite a few instances, where you see people talking on landline phones. He's talking on a payphone, things like that, which just gives it a great color. And it does give you this bygone sense of a bygone era and the traveling salesman. But all in all, I would say it's a quiet thriller, very indie. If you're looking for the next superhero movie, this is not it. But I feel like there is probably an audience. I just hope it finds one. You see these films and I don't know. I don't know if it will find a market for it because these aren't really made anymore. It's probably something you'll see on streaming. I thought it was rather good. I thought I have a few complaints about it, but everything's really kind of minor. But very strong characters. strong acting, very good script. All the dialogue seemed very natural. The score is really good. The sound design gives you this really great atmosphere. And in those moments of action, you are surprised, which is not something most thrillers do now. You're kind of like, they're kind of overly set up. They're kind of telegraphed. But this one, the action, some of the action comes out of nowhere. And it's, you know, there's a little build to it. And then boom, it's quick. It's brutal. It's ugly. It's very realistic in some cases. And it gives you this feeling of tactile world. And, you know, what I was saying about the cold, this movie makes you feel cold. This movie has a real atmosphere to it where you feel like you're in a real situation. So if that's your thing, definitely would recommend it. I don't think this movie is going to be for everybody, but all in all, it's a recommendation for me. And that's all we have for you today. Thanks so much for taking this trip down the rabbit hole. For more of our content, including our movie reviews, visit our website, norestfortheweekendpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube, youtube.com/getbehindtherabbit. I'd like to thank my guest, Rod Blackhurst, and our sponsor, JMR Rentals, for Behind the Rabbit Productions. I'm Jason Godby. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.
This is the BTRP Media Network.